Joining us on the podcast today, we've got Gregory Kurtzer from Rocky Linux. And this is an interesting conversation I think we're going to have here today about a little bit of Linux history and a lot about a recent change in sort of the fundamentals of Linux and where it's going in the enterprise. So, Greg, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So before we get into Rocky Linux, there's a reason why this even exists. And I think it goes back pretty obviously to the recent change over at Red Hat in regards to CentOS. And I know we'll talk about that in a little bit too. But what can you say about what happened last week that precipitated the project? Maybe not that you're working on, because I believe you already started on that, but the change in CentOS specifically, what's going on there at the high level?
There were two changes announced by Red Hat early last week on Tuesday, which the first change specified that they are no longer going to be tracking RHEL in the same manner in which they have been tracking RHEL, and instead they're going to be kind of in front of RHEL. They're going to be taking packages out of Fedora and kind of sitting a little bit between Fedora and Red Hat Enterprise Linux. They call that Stream, and that gives people the ability to test newer packages just before they would be going into RHEL. And I think that that's actually, there's a little bit of contention there in terms of, you know, what does it mean to be an enterprise operating system, and do enterprise operating systems really benefit from a Stream that is running, you know, versions slightly newer, slightly less tested and whatnot, rather than just kind of staying on something that's stable, a little bit, maybe a little bit older in some cases, but kind of leading the way instead of following the way of Red Hat Enterprise Linux. But that wasn't the massive blow. The real big blow was the fact that CentOS, which is, again, was always destined to track Red Hat Enterprise Linux and to have a very long life cycle, was end-of-lifed early. And we went from an end of life that was in 2029 for the project. So they originally had a 10-year lifespan, and they decided to shorten it to next year.
So, that's a bit jarring, cutting it off almost a decade, right?
Yes, yes. So that was really the big hit. Couple that with the fact that, the name CentOS kind of implies two major facets. First one is the C, which is community, and then the second one is enterprise. Mm-hmm. I feel as though that this, and a lot of people feel kind of similarly, that the decision here was not necessarily made in what's in terms best for the community, and the outcome of that is not necessarily what's best for an enterprise operating system. So in a matter of speaking, we just took the definition of CentOS away from CentOS, and now it's something new. And the community had a fairly strong negative reaction to that.
We'll get to that. What I've got to get to first is, why is CentOS the incorrect pronunciation?
So it's gone back and forth quite a bit. And actually, I wouldn't necessarily say correct or incorrect, but there is a story about when it was first created. The project actually came out of another project called Chaos Linux. In Chaos, we were building a completely community-focused, RPM-based distribution of Linux. There's a story there on why that was happening and why we were doing that. But when this project was underway, Red Hat decided to change their business model, and I don't know if anyone remembers, but Red Hat Linux preceded Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And sorry, I know I'm going off on a tangent, but I'll circle back. Red Hat Linux preceded Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and Red Hat Linux was in version, which is kind of interesting, version 8, and they decided to end of life Red Hat Linux version 8, and overnight. And all previous versions of Red Hat Linux actually as well. And it was not, they didn't give us a year, it was instantaneous. And then they introduced Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And we, along many other sites and organizations, were kind of stuck now all of a sudden without a Linux distribution that was going to be maintained We already had all of our tooling and infrastructure already set up for RPM and for a Red Hat type operating system. So making the jump over to Debian wouldn't have been quite as easy. So starting from that, we basically, you know, from our perspective, actually, we were building an operating system, an RPM based distribution of Linux. And it was pretty easy for us quickly to switch our tooling over and to start building Red Hat Enterprise Linux RPMs. And we did that. There was a gentleman named Rocky McGaw who already has been doing this, already has experience doing this. And he basically provided the core of what was then known as CentOS. And we didn't have a name for it for a while. We kept calling it Chaos EL, Enterprise Linux. But we ended up, there was another guy in the team that ended up offering up the name CentOS, and I really liked it. I said, but I really don't like the emphasis on the cent. And because it's technically, it's an infinite amount of increase from free, and it's putting the emphasis on the wrong part of what it is that we're doing. So long story short, everyone calls it whatever they want at this point. And it didn't exactly go how I was initially thinking, but I guess that's okay.
Well, the adoption certainly worked out either way. So regardless of branding or pronunciation challenges, I think you highlight two really important things around the tracking and the EOL, of course, is important too. When we think about enterprise software in the virtualization world, for instance, VMware will put out a new version of vSphere and everybody rushes to adopt it as soon as U1 is released. So no one goes there first unless there's some feature, maybe you're doing it in the lab and messing around with what's new. And that's often the case with any software, aside from patches that were forced to update in maybe in Windows or something like that. So the fundamental change of going from point releases in the traditional way to this stream methodology, as you say, sort of flies in the face of the whole point of why people are adopting CentOS in the first place. At the same time, though, and maybe you've got some insight on this as well, Red Hat's favorably talking about some of their customers like Facebook and Intel and some others that are part of the stream and excited about it and pushing that methodology forward. Is it that the rest of the enterprise world is getting too old and stodgy and slow and cloud and DevOps is the way forward and this is the point where it's thrust upon us? Or is there something else going on there that we need to be cognizant of?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if there's something else in particular going on, but organizations like Facebook have entire large, very large teams devoted to the management of their operating system. And I can't speak for Facebook, but the rumor is that even though that it's based on CentOS, they've been doing a lot of their own customizations in that anyway. So they have the ability to maintain it themselves. We saw similar in particular with Facebook with what they've done with MySQL. I mean, they're probably the biggest MySQL shop in the world. And you know, their team supports it, internally, right? They're not using necessarily any external support for that. So I think it is very similar in regards to what they're doing with the distribution. In terms of other organizations, I can definitely see why Streams is going to be very a good feature, actually, for a lot of organizations, especially organizations that are developing software, developing cloud, and do like to stay not only on the cutting edge, but like to understand and be on the forefront of what is going to be in RHEL. So there's a lot of benefits for that. But again, what we're kind of the groups that we're missing out on is all of the organizations that are leveraging CentOS for or any operating system for critical infrastructure management. And that is that's a really large number of organizations. So
there's no doubt. I mean, I look at what's in our lab. I talked to Kevin, who runs our lab before this, and we don't even have a production lab per se, but we've got 8 racks of gear and a couple hundred VMs, and well over half of those are CentOS Linux VMs. And okay, so the question is, now what? And I know you've got an answer to that with the project that you're involved in, but seriously, for third-party application providers that might have their hooks written into CentOS, for organizations that have their own applications, legacy or otherwise, that are set up there, or you know, NVR software that's set up, there's thousands of different ways and reasons that people would have VMs or machines set up on CentOS that now, and even enterprise storage providers have things that rely on CentOS VMs. You talk about the EOL of next year, that's a hell of an ask to port all of that stuff over, or just pause on whatever the last version of CentOS is that you can grab without having to go to stream. What do you think about what application vendors, providers using these VMs have to do to adjust?
So I'm going to talk about where it affects the areas that I'm most knowledgeable. So my background comes out of high performance computing, scientific computing, and really performance critical workloads. And the resources that we build in, you know, for these systems, generally, once you build them, you don't do a lot to them in terms of upgrades. You don't want to, especially on larger systems. You could have, you know, 10 users, 100 users, maybe even thousands of users leveraging this gigantic cluster. And every one of those applications, in many cases, are built directly on that hardware or dependent on something on that hardware, like an InfiniBand or a GPU device. So there's kind of a lot of interwoven dependency of everything that's running on these systems that really make that system what it is. If we were to move to a stream model where we don't necessarily have an extraordinarily stable infrastructure, it makes it very difficult in terms of both software applications that are running on that and the consistency of those software applications, as well as just managing upgrades and keeping the system running from a system administration perspective. Right? We don't want to have to think about, okay, a new version just popped into stream. We now have to make modifications and changes for our next up. We want everything to be stable. The stabler, better.
I mean, that's even assuming, though, that stream doesn't break something along the way, because there are fundamental hooks in there. I mean, you mentioned GPUs, FPGAs. If you want to look at anything sort of emerging, like, from Intel, Optane SSDs, maybe, or even persistent memory, there's all sorts of stuff there that can break really easily if it's not managed properly.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So that stability is critical. And again, we have applications in high-performance computing that are still on RHEL 6, and many of these commercial applications that are incredibly, people depend on them in many cases for very large systems. They're very critical in terms of the workflows. And this is one of the reasons why containers, granted, has been helping in high-performance computing. But we still need to have a very stable substrate for running all of this infrastructure on. So I'd say there's an application side, there's a user side, and there's an infrastructure side, and all of which kind of necessitates this absolutely as stable as possible infrastructure as we can manage. I mean, system administrators are grumpy enough as it is if they had to make
get out of here.
we want to make their jobs easier. We don't want to make their jobs harder.
Okay, so what it comes down to, though, is you're either going to have to adopt the stream methodology or do something else. Like there's not a, I guess you can float on the latest stable version for a while too, but ultimately you only have two choices, right? And if we want to move, I know you've got a preference here, but what's the landscape for other builds of Linux? What does the landscape look like for choices?
Let's see. So there are some existing rebuilds of Red Hat Enterprise Linux that exist today. So Oracle is an obvious choice.
which, by the way, the the juxtaposition of thinking about ditching something for Oracle in the Linux world is pretty amazing. And the fact that that's like the number one talked about answer is, I find it to be hilarious, but maybe I'm just jaded.
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
Okay. Carry on then.
So Oracle Linux is an option. And there's another organization out there called Cloud Linux that is pushing forth their rebuild of it as well. My concerns with these is I really do believe that this is a community initiative and it needs to remain in the community. Otherwise, we're always going to have the balance of business models and conflict of interest of business models with managing this as a free solution. So the same thing that we just saw with Red Hat and IBM could very easily happen with Oracle, could very easily happen with Cloud Linux or anyone else who does something similar. But it is an option. Those exist. Mm-hmm. There's another option out there, SUSE, of course. I have heard that there's a lot of people right now checking into both OpenSUSE as well as SLES. For an answer there. Of course, if they're looking for a free solution, they're going to be looking at OpenSUSE. Then, of course, there's always the people now that are always going back to kind of the community standard Linux distribution, which is Debian. And so there's a lot of people that I've heard also investigating Debian again and rethinking that. In terms of Debian, I think personally, if there was no other options aside from commercial options, I would probably be on the Debian train as well. But with that being said, again, kind of where my background is in high-performance computing, there is very, very little Debian as it is today. That's not to say it's okay, not going to change, but it's just a very small percentage of usage right now.
So the project that you're involved in, Rocky Linux, what's the genesis of that and where did that project get started?
So I've been having people ask me to create another version of CentOS for quite some time. The first wave of it happened when Red Hat announced that they have acquired CentOS. And that's when it first started happening. People were asking me about, are you interested in doing another CentOS? We think it should be outside of a commercial entity. We think it should be in the community. Are you interested in doing that? And I said, no, I think Red Hat will do good with this. And I didn't see a reason to do anything at that point. Then IBM announced their plans to acquire Red Hat. And now all of a sudden I had a bunch of hardware vendor friends and colleagues that basically asked me the same thing. You can imagine, pick your favorite hardware vendor, your favorite IHV, who is not IBM and doesn't necessarily want to be selling the operating system that IBM benefits from, right? They're basically giving market share to their competitor. So we actually had a number of IHVs asking me if I would recreate another CentOS. And at that point still, I was like, okay, maybe. Over the last year or so, the topic has come up more and more often. And I did have a little bit of visibility in terms of what was happening on the CentOS side and that there was going to be some shifting there. So I started thinking about it even more. And then that blog post came. And as soon as I heard about the blog post, I went over and I looked. And I just made a simple comment, which was, thinking of recreating CentOS. I don't remember exactly what my wording was, but thinking of recreating CentOS, and if anyone is interested in something like this, join the Slack. Let me know.
Now wait a minute. That wasn't the 8th, was it?
That was on Tuesday.
That was last week.
Yeah.
Okay. So last week you float the balloon. If anyone wants in, which you sort of knew you'd get a favorable response there, right? So a slow troll on that one, but you said, let's go, anyone want to take a look at this? And the outpouring, I assume, was overwhelming.
So I knew that there'd be some interest. I did not know that the interest would be so overwhelming that it's like drinking water from a fire hose on full blast. There's the velocity of support and help and people that want to be part of this was amazing. So I've been doing open source now for over 20 years. I know it very well. I've seen a lot of kind of, you know, community uprisings, these underground movements kind of take place. I swear, I thought that this was done like 10 years ago. I didn't think this was going to happen anymore. This is the biggest underground kind of upswell that I've ever seen in all of my years in open source. And I'm honored to be part of it is really what it's like.
So let's talk about some metrics, because we're basically talking about, you know, a week since that happened, so as we're recording this on Tuesday, on the 15th. I was looking, I pulled up your Rocky Linux subreddit just to see, you know, as one metric, which was created December 9th. When I looked at it, 3 days ago, you had 1,500 members. Today, you're at 2.6. I mean, the volition there seems to be, you know, at full speed. What else are you looking at to gauge the backing and interest you have in this first week of activity?
Well, we keep capping out on the limits of Slack in terms of invite links and whatnot. We are now in a week, we've basically gone, we are now upwards of 5,000 people, 5,500 people in Slack at this point. Now, to be, you know, completely transparent, we had a number of people on there beforehand. We had about, I think it was 1,200 or 1,300 people mm-hmm. in there. But in a week, we've bumped that upwards of 5,000, 5,500, somewhere around there. GitHub stars and trending on GitHub. We've been trending at least somewhere within the top 10 or so for at least one or two projects now for, I think, at least half a week, if not more, and actually sitting on the top of GitHub trending, you know, for a big piece of that. We created a Twitter account. I think we've posted like maybe 6 times on that. And there's already, last time I looked, there was like 2,500 people on that. And I mean, it's mind boggling. We've had 125,000 page views on our forums, which we just created. So right. the amount, and we have about 70 people actually right now working on the project. Now, Imagine coordinating going from zero to not only 70 people, but actually having an influx of thousands of people all asking to be part of this at the same time. It was a very interesting management challenge.
Well, you know, that's funny, because since you were there and did something similar 20 years ago or so, what is it like to manage a distribution build now versus then?
When we first started doing CentOS, it was like 5 people. but you know, there's certain aspects about having a small group that actually make certain things easier. Like you can lock down a server or a system and say, this is the build host, a physical host. We are going to build on this. We're allowing 3 people access to it, and that's it. And you're going to build here. We're going to host CVS, you know, packages in CVS, because that was how long ago it was. And, you know, this is how we're going to. Now, when you have, you know, dozens of people all trying to help with packaging and help with various pieces of this, it gets to be a very different situation, because now you need to have automated ways of building out your infrastructure that can accommodate this many people all trying to be part of this. And we're also going for various security and compliance accreditations. So things like FIPS, STIG, and whatnot. And to my knowledge, I think this is the only community operating system that's actually starting off thinking about this sort of stuff. And the reason why I am is because the people that I'm working with and you know, customers, if it was a, you know, if we're looking at it from a commercial perspective, but the people that I know that are going to be using this need to leverage operating systems that have these sorts of accreditations. So that's a big piece of it as well.
Well, you're talking about certifications and things that are important to, I mean, you lean towards HPC and high performance stuff, but the enterprise in general will need to be able to adopt something like this. But we're talking about 7 days in. What the hell do you even have? Do you have an operating distro? What do you like? What have you done in 7 days before you get down the road and talking about certifications?
So we have several a number of tasks all happening simultaneously. Okay. One is one on branding. So we've already done audits of all of the source code, figured out every area that has branding in it that needs to be removed in order to be compliant with upstream vendor trademarks and copyrights and whatnot. So we've gone through, we've identified those. We have a branding initiative going right now that's packaging and patching those RPMs or creating new RPMs to replace those RPMs, like the Red Hat logos package, right? We're obviously going to create a Rocky logos package. Things like that. So things like that. And so that's one side. Another side is we're looking at builders, we're looking at auto builders. So we've got a bunch of parallel research that's going on right now of contributors that are figuring out what do we need from that infrastructure? We have security teams right now that are defining what does the compliance requirements of our infrastructure need to be and how are we going to manage that compliance? What we're going to end up doing once we're done doing research on what it takes to build these package in a compliant manner, we're going to then figure out how to build the entire infrastructure in that manner. I guess on another side, in another parallel thread, we have people working on the installer already. And just using, you know, standard CentOS packages, we actually have already made a tremendous amount of movement in terms of actually building that that Rocky Linux installer, and again, branding around that as well.
So, what did you start from? I mean, you didn't start at a blinky cursor and say, how am I going to build this?" You've got some source materials that you're pulling together, right?
Yeah. So, and I want to be very clear about this. At some point, I did consider myself a developer and an engineer, and now I just know developers and engineers, and I just kind of talk with them and try not to sound stupid. So what the team has been doing, so I've been helping very much on the management side and really, you know, dividing up some of these primary initiatives and then empowering other contributors and other people on the team to actually do a lot of the leadership and the management of each one of those groups. And each one of those groups are basically approaching the problems differently, depending on what their outcome that they're going for is. So, for example, the Anaconda team, which is the installer, they're basically going through right now, again, identifying areas of branding that needs to be fixed, providing those to the branding contributors who are now building that branding. We're bringing that back into Anaconda. They are then taking that and they're figuring out all the processes and all the things that they need to do in order to build that installer. So it's really different for each group. You know, the people that are doing the packaging in the auto building group, again, you know, some of them are starting with a blinky cursor with an MTVI screen. But I would say that's not most of them.
So you'll hate this, but what's the timeline look like? And when do you guys aspirationally at least hope to have, you're never going to be done. Of course, this is going to be a passion for hundreds of people for a very long time, I assume. But what's the nearest milestone in terms of being operational and having something that's downloadable and installable and a fair to midland alternative to the existing CentOS build?
I would describe it as right now we're trying to identify the milestone to create an ETA. So we have, it's like having a meeting to figure out what you should be meeting about. We're hoping to have an ETA pretty soon of when we're going to have the ETA. If you ask me to take a swag at this, I would say we're probably looking at end of Q1, possibly beginning of Q2, to actually have a release done.
And at that point, obviously a lot of it'll be swatting bugs, as you start to get some feedback from end users. But what's the vision? I mean, you come from a performance background. Obviously, replacing or having a viable alternative to CentOS's thing, one, but there's got to be a greater vision beyond that. Do you have a specific performance angle that you're interested in? Is it some compatibility angle? I mean, what are you guys enthusiastic about aside from the base task? Not to undermine the difficulty of that task, but there's got to be something else at the high level directing your decisions.
Well, you know, it's funny. For many years, I kept thinking, I really wish CentOS would do this, or I wish those guys or that team would go in this direction or be thinking about this in addition. And then Red Hat, when Red Hat purchased it, Red Hat did invest quite heavily into CentOS, and they did a good job kind of building the documentation, furthering the community around it and whatnot. But still, I felt as though, there's always more and kind of interesting things to do. And I don't mean to give the impression that a lot of this wasn't done. But I think that, I think it could have been done a little differently. And I think it could have been done a little bit more from a community, with a community focus. So things like value adds on top of CentOS, there's the extras, there's the CentOS extras, there's Apple. But having these that are kind of focused on different sorts of areas. So we've already had some security people reach out to us that are very interested in adding some optimizations to CentOS that would enable additional security measures. Now, from my perspective, and I think it has to be very clear, is that CentOS, it's not CentOS, I keep saying CentOS, sorry. I'm going back.
I'm the one that did it wrong.
So Rocky will always be first and foremost a enterprise Linux distribution. That's our goal. Stability, upstream compliance, compatibility, bug for bug level of compatibility is one way that we've been describing it. But there's going to be a necessity, I think, at some point to have additional capabilities on top of that. And those capabilities would be optional, right? You're going to toggle a switch if you want to add additional security features. You're going to toggle a switch if you want to add additional orchestration or CI/CD or DevOps, DevSecOps features. You're going to toggle a switch if you want optimized high-performance computing stack. Right, so you're going to be able to just toggle a switch, make this extremely easy to add additional kind of customizations and capabilities on top of that already very stable base.
So how does that work with an open source project like this? Because I think, everything that you're describing about the CentOS journey into Red Hat, into IBM, the fundamental question that I haven't even bothered asking you yet would be something along the lines of, if not IBM, would this had happened? And I guess maybe is the answer. The more jaded amongst us would say, obviously IBM does this to everything. Why wouldn't you expect IBM to go this route? The answer doesn't really matter, but you do eventually have to build a little bit of an infrastructure, a little bit of something, in a formal organization, don't you, with these things?
Yeah. And let me go back to something you just said, because I think it is critical to bring up. I don't want to speculate where this decision came from. There was a news post just recently. I think it was Red Hat's VP of Linux Engineering, who said something along the lines of, CentOS wasn't very useful to Red Hat. Don't quote me exactly on that. It's public. It's out there. So you can see the actual...
That notion's laughable, though, right?
But I don't want to speculate in terms of where this decision came from and how it came to be. CentOS does have a board of directors. There's a contingent of that board of directors that is community. There's a contingent that is Red Hat. wherever this decision came from, whatever the motivation was, I don't want to speculate if it was IBM or if it was Red Hat or even community, you know, the members of the board that was community. And I have heard, again, this is a rumor, but I have heard that IBM actually was surprised by this. So I don't know the story. I don't know what's going on, and I don't necessarily want to speculate or create rumors or anything like that, especially as I'm developing something that's that could be seen as competing.
That's okay. I'll do the speculating for you.
Okay. Now, your second question about infrastructure and the organization structure. This is absolutely critical. We see this as bigger than just a Linux distribution project. This is really a community, and we're going to really focus this on that community. So a Linux distribution is going to be coming out of this community, of course. But as I said, with special interest groups and focus groups and whatnot, which again, I don't mean to imply that there has not been interest and initiatives in that from the CentOS and Fedora teams. There has been, and it's been quite successful. But I do think that there's things that we could be doing different with regards to that. And that's some of the things that I'd like to investigate further. But to going back to the point, this is absolutely, this is bigger than just a clone of Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And to that point, I've already taken initiative to ensure that there is a not-for-profit foundation that's already being built right now. And it is going to be called the Rocky Linux Foundation. And that foundation, the goal of this is to be a nonprofit, of course, gaining the IRS tax exemption status, the 501c3 status, is not a trivial thing to do. Sure. And ironically, it's a very expensive thing to do legally. But that is our intention. So it was, this foundation was created with the intention of it being a nonprofit. In the meantime, until we get that IRS tax exemption status, it is a not-for-profit organization. And that will be used to really help kind of with the organizational structure.
Just talking to you, you're clearly passionate about this. Why is that? It feels a little more personal to me to hear you talk about what you're doing here. And obviously I didn't know you back in the CentOS days, and maybe you were just as passionate, and you're always passionate, and that's cool too. But this one feels to me like it's really meaningful to you. Is there a reason for that, or am I just picking up on your overall energy for the project?
I think I'd like to think that both are true. with that being said, I wanted a lot out of CentOS when it was first created and Chaos Linux and building Linux distributions and kind of working at the operating system level is something that's always been very interesting to me, very passionate to me. You could see that not only in the distribution projects that I've worked on, but my other projects, all of them are very low level. So an example of this, and I don't mean this as a plug, but if you don't mind, I created about 20 years ago now, I created a cluster management system, which is called Werewolf. It is a provisioning and management system, and allows you to grow clusters up to many thousands of compute nodes and manage them all as if they were just one system. So that's called Werewolf. I just finished rewriting the version 4 of Werewolf, but it's, again, it's very low level. We're talking operating system level development here. A little bit more recently, I created a container system called Singularity, which is a dominant container system inside of high performance computing, compatible with Docker, but it allows you allows users to be able to run scientific jobs without increasing privilege. That was about 5 years ago when I first created that. Again, very kind of low level operating system stuff. So that's just where my interest is, and where I like to be thinking about. So this is a project for me that I'm extremely excited about. I'd love to see, where this is going to go. I'd love to see all of the community involvement. And I got to say, having so many people also so excited about this is energizing. I mean, there's literally, I can't keep up with the messages of people basically saying, how can I help? I want to be part of this. And it is absolutely energizing in the sense that I'm pulling all-nighters again, working on this. And I haven't done that in quite some time.
Well, what is the answer to that question? If people want to get involved here, obviously they can check out the GitHub, and if even more passively, just support the subreddit. But what else can they do if they want to get involved or share your passion in some specific thing around containers or management or storage or whatever?
Yeah, we're asking for everybody who's interested in this. Right now, there's a Slack that we're using. We are hitting some of the limits in scalability on that Slack. I've reached out to Slack and asked them if they would sponsor this. They said they would, but it is not Slack is very expensive when it gets big. They said they would give us a good discount.
I'm well aware.
But it, you know, yeah, discount's not quite enough. I mean, we don't have bank accounts at this point for the project. So, we're looking at options in terms of what are we going to do longer term. We're aware that Slack is at this point, you know, unless something changes, it's going to be a temporary solution. So we are looking at other ways of handling the community and working with the community. But for now, it isn't Slack. If you go to rockylinux.org, there's a big button that says join in the Slack, join in the conversations. There's also a discussion forum that you can jump onto. Highly recommend both of those. There's also a couple of IRC channels on Freenode if people are interested in that. We're trying to tie them together as much as possible. And for a while, I was on, you know, multiple of these, just because there was the velocity of conversations and whatnot, I ended up just stopping and just saying, I just need to focus on Slack because otherwise it's just too much. Yeah. But what I'd recommend is if people are interested, jump into our Slack. In the Slack, we've got a bunch of different channels that are organized according to roles, projects, groups, areas of focus. And we're trying to split up the community into groups that are manageable, right? Managing a single channel with you know, 3,000 people in it is a very difficult task. And I'd actually dare say almost impossible. But we're breaking up these into smaller task groups, you know. So jump into, you know, look on the Slack, see what someone might be interested in. There's roles for technical people as well as non-technical people. We love having, you know, people join and taking part and taking initiative and being part of this. So absolutely come join the party.
We only have about 15 people in our Slack, and I posted about, I had ice cream delivered to the office today, and the amount of engagement on that one channel in Slack, it can be quite a bit to manage. Yeah. If it's ice cream, forget about trying to coordinate a couple thousand devs on a project like this. You hit on a couple things I just want to visit in a little more depth. Containers is something you've mentioned at least twice in this conversation. And of course, you know, if you look at any of the cloud foundation numbers, containers are going through the roof, and you know, everyone's doing it or at least experimenting with it. How big of a deal is that as you think about organizing this distribution? Do you have to do anything special there? What's the deal as you look at that sort of emerging modality for the enterprise?
If I'm looking at it holistically from the enterprise perspective, I think it's a really different view than what it is for Rocky Linux, at least today. For Rocky, it is to track Red Hat Enterprise Linux as closely as possible. So what Red Hat Enterprise Linux is doing in terms of containers, we are going to basically be tracking that verbatim. In terms of the role of containers in the ecosystem, that's a very different conversation. And what containers are doing is they're basically abstracting out the entire runtime portion of the operating system. So typically you've got your physical or virtual layer of hardware. On top of that, you've got your kernel structures. And then on top of that, you've got your user space. What we just did is we just basically modularized the entire user space and allowed that user space to be somewhat swappable. In my mind, that's the biggest advantage of what containers is bringing to the table. Yeah, I mean, there's some namespaces, and we can virtualize those namespaces. We could run it into a VM. There's lots of different options for what you do with that. But it is a packaging format, right? It is a higher level packaging format, again, from my perspective. And with that has changed and revolutionized a massive amount of the infrastructure. Kubernetes, I think, is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of where this is going to go.
Yeah, I had on the CEO of Rancher not long ago, and of course, you know, he's very passionate about containers, but everywhere along the way had Roblox on. They were talking about how containers basically saved their infrastructure from demise if they hadn't, and they didn't even know it at the time. They were having problems, but they didn't really understand how much better things would be when they went to containers. And it's, for a lot of organizations, it's just revolutionizing the way they engage. And then, gosh, all the trickle down of, okay, well, where are we putting our investment in software? Where are we putting our investment in cloud and hardware and all these other things? Pretty fundamental. Do you have any thoughts on server management? You talked a little bit about some of the projects that you were involved in, like Werewolf, but let's see, I'm thinking about other things going on in the enterprise. You know, Redfish is popular for server administration and in bulk, and there's a couple other things like that. Is there anything else there that that you think is interesting or compelling that you need to be concerned about in Rocky?
Again, from the perspective of Rocky, not to sound like a boring broken record, it's just a mirror Red Hat Enterprise Linux. In terms of where this is going to go from there, though, I think that there's a lot of options. And again, this is where these special interest groups and focus groups are going to be really interesting conversations, and being able to leverage this as a community that is not necessarily motivated by a particular hardware architecture or a particular software environment gives a lot of flexibility, and it gives us the ability to have very open and candid conversations in terms of what is best for this community and what do people need. So a lot of the stuff that I'm going to be thinking about, and while I'm already am thinking about it, is how do we inclusively bring together disparate sections of the ecosystem? And again, this one kind of rings home true for me, but example of this is high-performance computing and enterprise. Historically, these have been like two separate parties going on within an infrastructure, right, within an organization. So if you work at a pharmaceutical, if you work in an oil and gas or manufacturing or energy or anything like that, or scientific, most of these organizations have very large high-performance computing resources. And in many cases, that HPC resource is significantly larger in terms of an investment, in terms of the rest of the enterprise resources. But IT and HPC typically do not communicate together, right? They are like separate sections of the organization, and we haven't seen a huge amount of crossover and pollination. And this is happening in much more than just HPC. Right now, this is happening in Edge. This is happening, in a variety of different ways. And I think that being able to approach this from a larger community and say, how do we solve this? Again, from a nonprofit, what is just the best way of thinking about this, and how do we bring these ideas together, I think is really one of the most interesting areas and facets of what we could be potentially doing with this community.
Well, you talk about mirroring Red Hat. What if there were a case where they made some sort of fundamental decision that you guys didn't agree with or didn't want to do or thought was strange or bizarre or possibly, I don't know, dangerous in some way? Is there a way for you to branch off, or would that be something that you would see maybe as part of the switches you were describing before to get access to, you know, alternate features or builds of the stack? What do you think?
Here we are many years into systemd, and people are still complaining about systemd. Now, with that being said, I don't think we would necessarily change that out. But and are there areas of Red Hat Enterprise Linux that I think that they made mistakes on? And absolutely. I was part of the initial early discussions in 99 and 2000 in the Linux standard base in terms of file system hierarchy. And I could tell you whoever's bright idea it was at Red Hat Linux or Red Hat to move all of your system directories to links under user, bad idea. you've really screwed us up a lot in terms of HPC and provisioning and whatnot. But with that being said, we're going to end up repeating those mistakes in Rocky Linux again, because we're not trying to create something new. The whole point of this is to create something that we can count on that is completely compatible with the upstream vendor, which is Red Hat.
Now, maybe asking too much, but Red Hat also has a HCI implementation. Would it be possible, in your vision, to ultimately have a Rocky version of a full hyperconverged stack, or is that
There's definitely been some conversations around that as well. I can't say where those conversations are going to end up yet, but from a server infrastructure perspective, as many of those features that we can bring in, we're going to be bringing in, and you're going to see that inside of Rocky, just like you see that in Red Hat Enterprise Linux. The only limitation to that is when licenses will prohibit us from redistributing any of those capabilities. To my knowledge, and please don't quote me on this because I'm not informed enough yet to speak definitively on this, but there's not a huge amount in Red Hat Enterprise Linux that we can't distribute, but there is a little bit. So There's going to be some.
In that case, is that a licensing issue, or is that something the teams will try to engineer, not around, but to create a new alternative solution? Like, how would you address that?
In order to maintain the compatibility and the expectation, it is my feeling at this point that what we would do is just not include those. And then if somebody wants that, that would be in one of these extra switches that you would turn on to get something possibly compatible, but not necessarily the same.
And I know you're a performance guy, but not strictly, storage, which is a little bit more our focus. Anything else the storage world should be thinking about in relation to what you guys are doing at Rocky?
I wish I could answer that. I've been very lucky in my career.
It's a bit specific, I understand.
I've always had experts in storage working with me. So I always got to be a little bit lax and lazy on the storage side. I can basically, just say, hey, what do you think about this? Or what are we going to do here? And let them architect that. So my knowledge in storage is not quite as strong as it probably should be. So I wouldn't even dare to take a stab at that.
Oh, that's all right. There's so much going on, though, with AMD EPYC CPUs now, and the Gen 4 enablement that they've got for PCIe storage, and all the new GPUs and FPGAs, and like the hardware world. And I don't know, maybe we're just a little bit more nerdy about it because we like to see and touch all that stuff. But you talked about some of the work Mellanox is doing before with their computational NICs. I mean, there's so much going on the hardware side that's really cool. And it sounds like your base build will be accommodating to most of those things, because there's already, in fact, a lot of that, the support starts in Linux before it goes anywhere else. So that's not much of a stretch. Well, fantastic conversation, Greg, really appreciate it. And the links that you mentioned to the core site and the how to join the Slack channel, we'll put that in there. We'll put in a link to your subreddit and just really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know you've had 7 days on this. I expect by end of Q1, early Q2, we'll see something on release. But certainly keep us updated on your progress.
Absolutely, and please stay tuned. There's going to be a lot of announcements and a lot of cool stuff coming. So,
hey, we got to go somewhere too. We've got a couple hundred VMs on CentOS, so we've got to figure it out. Appreciate it. Thanks again, Greg.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you.